Okay, it is January 11th, 2011. We're doing Who's Who in the Talmud. This is part three of Rabbi Akiva. The first week when we did Rabbi Akiva, someone like immediately asked the first question about Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba. One thing that he's known for is for supporting this idea that Bar Kokhba was in fact the Mashiach. And you could imagine just how important of a position this would have been, especially later on, you know, with the scandals with Chabad and all, about what is wrong, or, you know, how do you deal with someone who thinks someone is Mashiach who really isn't? And it's just normally attributed to Rabbi Akiva. Very few people have seen the source inside. So we're going to do that today, and you'll actually find that textually most of what we're going to do today is less about Rabbi Akiva and more about Bar Kokhba, because it helps put things in context. Important to note that the source is Yerushalmi Ta'anit 4-5. If you're doing the academic citation, it's 68B to 69A. It's in Yerushalmi, which means not many people have seen it inside. The translation here follows that of Jacob Neusner, who before Art Scroll got to it, wrote a translation of the Yerushalmi, a really, really great resource, because the Yerushalmi is a little more difficult to understand. It's important to reiterate here that Jacob Neusner was not a big fan of using the Talmud or any sort of rabbinic literature as really a historical document, meaning just because it's in a Gemara, just because the Gemara discusses something historical doesn't mean history actually happened in that way. This is a report of, you know, certain things, but it may or may not have occurred. It could have been like stories, it could have been exaggerations, various, or even a moral message that somehow got reinserted. But those are certain things to consider, at least, when we do this source here. Sean, start us off with the first paragraph.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai taught Akiva Manasseh, we interpret the following verse. A star, Kochav, shall come forth out of Yaakov's
Jacob, yeah. Meaning he's quoting a pasuk here. The Midbar, Numbers 24:17. So it says a star, Kochav, right, will come out of Jacob, but on the other hand,
a disappointment,
Koziba.
Koziba.
What it's in Hebrew.
Shall come forth out of Yaakov. Mm. Rabbi Akiva, when he saw Bar Koziba, he said, "This is King Mashiach." Said to him, Rabbi Yochanan ben Toretta, Akiva, grass will grow on your cheeks, and the Mashiach will not yet have come.
Yeah. So really, it's just this little paragraph is all that we have to go on in all of rabbinic literature that I know of, at least. If someone knows of, you know, an earlier source like from Midrashim or the Bavli, I'd love to see it. As far as I know, this is the source where it's attributed to Rabbi Akiva that he thought this guy Bar Koziba, who's attributed to being Bar Kokhba, we'll see at the end, in this passage here, Bar Kokhba is called Koziba all the way through, an interesting discussion about how that happened. But for all intents and purposes, for now, let's just assume Bar Kokhba is Bar Koziba. And he says, Rabbi Akiva is saying, this guy is Mashiach, and one of his colleagues says, basically, it's not going to happen in your lifetime. Now, before we even get to like the rest of the story about Bar Kokhba, and forget about it. Before we get to the stories, what do you think is just going on in this little exchange here? Then you have Rabbi Akiva, who's saying this guy's the Mashiach, and he's being dissuaded by Rabbi Yochanan ben Toretta. Nothing? All right, well, consider this. At this time, you're talking about having a war with a foreign invader. When you say that so-and-so is a Mashiach, so-and-so is a Messiah, and you start disseminating that, you've got a really bad risk that you're running, specifically if you're wrong. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says you're not supposed to calculate the time of the end of days for that very reason. If you think about it, no apocalyptic cult has been proved correct to this day. It's very, you know, it's, what do you say, the world's going to end in 2012. Well, you know, if it does end, like, okay, you know, no one's going to be around to know. And if it doesn't end, people know that you just made the whole thing up. So there certainly is a practical reason if someone, especially in the time of war, to say this is the end of days. And the truth is, it really is tempting to do that, because when you're fighting for your life and you're fighting for survival, and things can get very heated, it's very easy to, you know, either be overly hopeful to the point where you really think that this is it and everything's going to work out just fine. So we see it didn't really happen with Bar Kokhba. To give an example, I was in Israel at 9/11, and there was a guy who happened to have been learning in the Beis Midrash, an American guy, also a computer programmer. So you would think someone who's normally very rational, except at this point he was hearing a lot of shiurim from Kabbalists who were talking about how, you know, after, you know, the towers fell down, said, you know, there's going to be a big war. It's going to be America versus the Muslims. It's going to be the equivalent of Gog and Magog. Like, this is going to be the war that's going to bring Mashiach. And, you know, somewhat skeptical, he says, no, don't be skeptical. You have to hear, you know, what this guy is saying. And, you know, eventually things calm down, but it's in that heat of the moment you're trying to come up with, you know, either trying to come up with some optimism in the middle of battle. You know, it's really easy to start thinking in such terms, like, this absolutely has to positively be the end of it. You know, people made such equations with Zionism too. You know, there being a messianic element behind that as well. It's why, you know, certain people were very hesitant to accept Zionism, because they thought, well, taking over the land of Israel, people are going to think, oh, Mashiach is going to come, you know, within the next 5-10 years, and eventually, you know, he doesn't come. So that's just a very practical level of, you know, why, you know, that he could be saying, you know, hush up. It wasn't that, you know, Rav Yochanan ben Tereta was, you know, didn't think Mashiach was going to come. Maybe not even necessarily in his lifetime, but it could have just been his way of telling Rabbi Akiva to, you know, tone it down a little. Because, you know, such ideas could be very difficult. We'll see it in the next passages here that Bar Kokhba as a general was very well respected. Some could say he was somewhat of a militant. And we'll, you know, talk about exactly how people viewed Bar Kokhba and the rest of the Yerushalmi. But when we do these sources, think about what it would mean to have Rabbi Akiva's endorsement, and why Rav Yochanan ben Tereta would have, you know, interjected to say, you know, calm down, it's not going to happen.
So Bar Kokhba is...
Yeah, for the moment we'll, you know, take Bar Kokhba as Bar Kokhba.
But then he says here, Kokhba refers to a disappointment.
Yeah.
Did he sin, Bar Kokhba?
Well, it's not so much that he sinned as much as he clearly wasn't the Mashiach.
So that was a disappointment.
Well, yeah, you could definitely read it that way.
Is that... the disappointment part, is that the whole thing is Rabbi Akiva? So Rabbi Akiva interpreting the Pasuk, a star shall come out of Jacob, to mean a Kokhba shall come out of Jacob? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the Pasuk, and then there's a second statement of Rabbi Akiva, that when he saw Bar Kokhba, he said, this is the King Messiah, as Neusner translated. Jonathan, take the next two paragraphs, I guess.
Said Rabbi Yochanan, upon order his voice of Caesar, Hadrian, and Betar, they killed 80,000 myriads. Said Rabbi Yochanan, there were 80,000 pairs of trumpeters that surrounded Betar. Each one was in charge of a number of troops. Ben Kokhba was there, and he had 20,000 troops.
200,000.
200,000 troops, who, as a sign of loyalty, had cut off their little finger. Sages sent word to him, how long are you going to turn Israel into a maimed people? He said to them, how otherwise is it possible to test them? They replied to him, whoever cannot uproot a cedar of Lebanon while riding on his horse will not be registered in your army. So there were 200,000 who qualified in one way, and another who qualified in another way.
So, all right, so a couple of things here to consider is, one, it seems that, you know, Betar, which was eventually destroyed, you know, Gemara talks about, you know, the destruction of Betar. According to this account, the Jews had the majority. You know, and two, it seems that, you know, when surrounding Betar, you know, you have more people and you're also being sieged, which, if anyone reads Sun Tzu's Art of War, is not a very good military tactic, very draining. But what did he do? He had them cut off his finger to test their loyalty, which sounds kind of strange. I mean,
cultish.
Cultish how?
Like, if we're talking about him as possibly being some sort of messianic figure, like, let's follow him, he's going to bring the end of days, and then you think about 200,000 people cutting off their finger?
What other... Oh, right. Right, well, the Hellbop people, if anyone remembers them, what was it? It was the Comet. You know, there was some cult where you had people, some of the men underwent castration because the guy said so. So possible, we don't know if anyone else viewed Bar Kokhba as Mashiach. The only source that I know that who thought he was Rabbi Akiva, so it might not have applied to everyone else. It's a great point. I didn't think of that.
He was the kind of leader that could get people to 200,000 people to do it. So that's something about him, personality-wise, in terms of he could be that kind of leader that people might follow, whether or not he actually ends up being the Mashiach.
Yeah, and then there's also some resistance on the part of the sages, where you think, like, you know, on one hand you think, you know, this guy's out there, he's fighting for us, we ought to support him all he can, and even they have sort of the good sense to realize, like, hey, how is this helping you? Like, you have soldiers, they're trying to fight. Why do they need to cut off their finger? And it seems counterproductive, counterintuitive. And for his answer, it wasn't even, you know, it's also weird how they answer, because they didn't say, what you're doing is crazy. They actually took his response seriously. It says, well, how else am I supposed to test their loyalty? Or not even test their loyalty, but test their, I don't know exactly what it, you know, I guess it would be strength, but I don't know how cutting off your finger would demonstrate your strength. If anything, it would make you weaker, but to demonstrate their, you know, capability for serving is to pick up a cedar of Lebanon, a huge tree, while riding on the horse, which itself seems like a superhuman feat. Right, and possibly, you know, I don't know how much people want to read into it in terms of miracles, but it also might, you know, call into question a bit if the intent here is really the intent of having this Gemara to take it as historical fact that this is in fact what happened. But even just look, you know, try to read into a bit. What about the exchange between the sages and Bar Kokhba? There seems to be a dispute as to how to deal with it. The sages didn't have enough to say back off entirely and say, you know, dude, just stop cutting off people's fingers. They actually provided him with another option, which seems kind of implausible in its own right. But according to this, people actually managed to do so. So you've got a leader, certainly charismatic enough. Odd ideas about how to about how to train your soldiers was somewhat had, you know, for one paragraph so far, seems to have a weird relationship with the sages. That on one hand the sages felt comfortable contesting him, but not comfortable enough overruling him entirely. I mean, let's face it, you know, if he is that great of a leader and he's in charge of an army, there's only so much you're going to push. Make a little sense? A little confused.
I'm just thinking how someone as big as Rabbi Akiva could say he's Mashiach.
All right, hold on to that. That's a great question. Hold on to that until the end. Unless you have some ideas. Like, if you have an idea based on what we say now.
Maybe Mashiach was going to come, and then, you know, Jewish people, we did something just to stop it, and Hashem didn't let it infinitely come through.
Possibly. Well, let's finish, and we'll talk. It's a wonderful point. Hold on to it. Here, write it down in case you forget. But it's really crucial that we get back to that at the end. Tracy, take the next two paragraphs.
When he would go forth in battle, he would say, Lord of the world, do not help and do not hinder us. Hast thou not rejected us, O God? Thou dost not go forth, O God, with our armies.
Should be thou, sorry for the typo there. All right, so he's signing a pasuk in Tehillim 60:10, where this seems to be fairly strange also. Where Bar Kokhba would say, you know, he's going out, you'd think, why doesn't he pray to God to help him? And he's actually saying, well, actually, you know, stay out of our way. Which also seems to run in contrast to, you know, pasuk, you know, this is embarrassing. Well, you can pass me a chumash, please. It happens from time to time. I'm really annoyed. It's from Ikev of my bar mitzvah parsha. Thank you. But it's a good pasuk. It's a relevant pasuk, and if it wasn't my bar mitzvah parsha, I wouldn't have assumed that I remember it. Okay, here we are. It's Dvarim Parchet Yudzain, but Martabil Vavecha Kochivo Tem Yadia Sal Yetachayel Hazeh. That, you know, you come in and you say, well, it's really through my own strength that I made myself, you know, a good soldier and a good warrior. Kind of seems to be embracing that. He's basically saying, you know, don't help, don't hurt, just, like, you know, get out of the way. Very odd thing for a Jewish general to say, you know, especially what you might consider to be a religious war. right? And, you know, one would think it appropriate if you're going to be the King Mashiach. Take the next paragraph, too.
3.5 years did Hadrian besiege Beitar. Rabbi Elazar of Modi'in would sit on sackcloth and ashes and pray every day, saying, Lord of the worlds, do not sit in judgment today. Do not sit in judgment today.
All right, so Rabbi Elazar of Modi'in was trying to say, like, you know what, like, you know, please, this isn't looking good for us. Let's, you know, asking God not to judge. Here's where things get a little bit wacky. Continue with the next paragraph, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hadrian wanted to go see him. A Samaritan said to him, do not go to him until I see what he is doing, and so hand over the city of Beitar to you. He got into the city through a drainpipe. He went and found Rabbi Elazar of Modi'in standing and praying. He pretended to whisper something in his ear. The townspeople saw him do this and brought him to Ben-Koziba. They told him, we saw this man having dealings with your uncle. He said to him, what did you say to him, and what did he say to you? He said to him, if I tell you, then the king will kill me, and if I do not tell you, then you will kill me. It is better that the king kill me and not you. He said to him, he said to me, I shall hand over my city, I shall make peace.
Yeah, all right, go on, yeah, do the rest of the story.
He went to Rabbi Elazar of Modi'in. He said to him, what did the Samaritan do to you? He replied, nothing. He said to him, what did you say to him? He said to him, nothing. Then Koziba gave Elazar one good kick and killed him.
Yeah.
Powerful kick.
That's a powerful kick, yeah.
Forthwith, an echo came forth and proclaimed the following verse. Woe to my worthless shepherd, who deserts the flock. Let his arm be wholly withered, and his right eye utterly blinded. It's from Zechariah.
11:17.
You have murdered Elazar of Modi'in, the arm of all Israel, and their right eye. Therefore, may the right arm of that man wither, may his right eye be utterly blinded. Forthwith, Beitar was taken, and Ben-Koziba was killed.
Wow.
I got a little lost in that.
Okay, right. So, two things. One, when Neusner translates here as Samaritan, in the Gemara, the term uses kuti. A group of people that has a very complicated relationship in rabbinic literature. People who may have converted, may have not converted, depending on what generation you happen to be reading. So, recap the story quickly. Hadrian wanted to go see him. The Samaritan, you know, snuck said, you know, I'll go find him for you. He snuck in. And the Samaritan, you know, spoke to Ben-Koziba, and he said, or at least someone tipped Ben-Koziba off that this guy was being served Elazar of Modi'in, right? Ben-Koziba Bar Kokhba said to the Samaritan guy, what did he tell you? He said, well, I'm a messenger of Hadrian. Like, either way, I'm going to die. If I'm going to die, you know, Hadrian's going to kill me, not you. And Bar Kokhba said, okay, fine, you can go. So then when he went up to, Rebbe Elazar of Modi'in himself, Rebbe Elazar... When Bar Kokhba went to Elazar Modi'in of himself, he said, okay, so what information did you give over? And he said, well, I'm nothing, meaning he just wasn't revealing what was told, perhaps, again, under the same idea that, you know, if a king asks you for a certain piece of information, you don't just go around telling people that, right? So the messenger, Bar Kokhba, let go because he gave him an answer of, well, you know, I have a choice here, right? You know, I'm dead either way. I'd rather be killed, you know, by him, you know, by the king than by you. So he goes over to, Rebbe Elazar Modi'in, says, okay, well, you tell me what happened. He said no, or he didn't even say no, he said nothing. And we kind of lied to him, right, because there was an exchange, but he said nothing, you know, asked him again. He said, first, what did he say to you? And, you know, nothing. And what did you say to him? Nothing. In a sense that he denied that this exchange ever took place, which is very different than saying, oh, an exchange took place, but I can't tell you. He's actually, you know, lying to the guy, and Bar Kokhba didn't take kindly to that because he knew otherwise. You know, he wasn't just tipped off beforehand, but he ran into the Kuti fellow who had the conversation and said, yeah, I just, you know, I'm not telling. At any rate, his response was to kick Rebbe Elazar of Modi'in, killing him, thus killing the person who was praying, you know, on behalf of Beitar for God not to sit in judgment. And after he died, you know, this Bach cult, this echo comes out of heaven and says, wow, you know, you just killed your last lifeline. And just as you killed basically the one person who was really holding up Beitar, and immediately after he did that, he was killed. Shimon, take the final paragraph on the second side of the page.
They came and brought his head to Hadrian?
His head, referring to Bar Kokhba's.
Oh, right. He said, who killed this man? Samaritan, Cusi, said, I killed him. He said to him, show me his corpse. He showed him his corpse. He found a large snake wrapped around him. He said, if it were not God who had killed him, who could have killed him? And concerning him, he cited the following verse. How should one chase 1,000 and who put 10,000 to fight, unless their rock had sold them and the Lord given them up?
Right. So his, you know, the response was, oh, he's dead. So if he's dead, then it must be, you know, it was God's choice, because this wouldn't have happened if God allowed it. Now, looking over this, you know, little narrative, you know, in its entirety, it seems, you know, there are a lot of strange things going on here that, you know, make us call into question whether or not this actually happened, but it's here for a reason. So things that, you know, like to throw out for possible suggestions or topics. Exactly, you know, what was the risk of, you know, this guy? I mean, why would someone call him Mashiach? Especially when, well, I guess there would be two part questions. The first part question is, how would you define the character of Bar Kokhba? And then the second part is, Rabbi Akiva attributing, you know, being the Mashiach to him. So what would be some adjectives you'd use to describe him?
Powerful.
Powerful in which sense?
And very physically.
Sure. And can kill a guy with a kick. That's right. Like Chuck Norris. Yeah.
And he also obviously had, he was a leader. Like, people followed what he did.
Yeah.
When he said something like, you know,
200,000 people. Yeah, you know, certainly an imposing figure. I mean, because this Kutzi guy went up to him and said, you know what, I'm dead either way. So he was operating under the assumption that the guy would have killed him. And you could also say, well, you know, anytime, if you disobey, was it insubordination in the time of war? You know, I think in certain armies, I think there's grounds for, you know, being killed on the spot. You know, because lives are at risk. You could view him as, you know, the stereotypical hot-headed general that you have in any movie. Like, you know, you're disobeying orders, you know, blows them away type thing. Yeah, what else?
Also the fact that, you know, when he was killed, it was like, how could this person be, how could he have been killed?
Yeah.
It's like, you're shocked at how he could kill this. It's almost like, not like a godly figure, but like, it's like shocking that he could be killed.
Sure.
The only way he could be killed is if God himself, like...
When you're on the inside of a siege, you've got a strategic advantage. So you've got a strategic advantage, they've got a numerical advantage, and clearly they're led by, you know, a really powerful, imposing general, and yet he's dead. Right? And it's also odd that Hadrian would actually, you know, say this, or quote, you know, Devarim. It's not something you would necessarily expect, but again, the point, you know, is kind of showing, you know, showing Bar Kokhba in a fairly negative light here. And this is pretty extreme. You're talking about, you know, a guy who, you know, is a murderer, maybe mentally unstable. You wouldn't consider him by any stretch of the imagination a religious leader, especially if when you're about to go to battle, it's one thing not to, you know, pray to God to ask for help, but when you're actually praying, God, stay out of it, we, you know, like, you know, thanks God, we got this one, you know, it seems really, really odd. So, and, you know, putting this in context, right, you know, I think it makes Rabbi Akiva's statement all the more, you know, all the stranger. We don't know exactly what happened when. Clearly, you know, the thing with Rav Elazar from Modi'in happened, you know, towards the end, which itself, you know, could be indicative of, you know, Rabbi Akiva's thought. When you have a messianic figure, it's very easy, especially if he's charismatic and he's very powerful, to get so overly optimistic that, you know, he's the guy, right? You get caught up in such fervor. But at the end, pretty much every one of them has been exposed to be a fraud. In which case, followers need to do a whole lot of apologetics or to go back and admit they're wrong. You know, you have, you know, I guess, in, you know, one of the famous historical examples is Shabtai Tzvi, which from, you know, what little I've read of it, his personality seemed to have been closer to really being bipolar, being manic depressive. But at the time, you know, it's very easy to get, you know, caught up in it. But at the end, you know, things didn't go out so well. Wound up converting to Islam.
You know, Baba Sharebi, I think they stole some of the, they still say he stole some Mashiach, or he's still alive, or
I don't know how many. I had one of my Rebbeim said that there are two types of Lubavitchers, those who say he's, those who believe he's Mashiach and those who say he's Mashiach. I mean, some will say, I don't know. I'm not in that world. I would get, there are probably some Chabad who still thinks he's Mashiach. Where David Berger, came in with his book and his criticisms of Chabad was his, and we'll talk about this in our Sunday class in a few months or so maybe. Part of his argument was, take a step back. His field in academics is very much in Jewish-Christian polemics in the Middle Ages. So he knows a lot about dialogue and Jews defending themselves against Christianity. A lot of it had to do with the messianism of Jesus. Now, Jesus was crucified, as we all know. So, if you thought that he was going to be the Messiah and do X, Y, and Z, and he doesn't accomplish it in his lifetime, you now have to come up with, well, what do we do now? And you'd be like, resurrection, second coming, and all that thing. And he didn't do it the first time around, but he'll do it the second time around. And for many centuries, that was the crux of the Jewish argument. The Jewish argument, the counter-argument is like, no, Mashiach, regular person, gets up, it's a job to do, doesn't do it, that's it. And Chabad changed its rhetoric after, I shouldn't say Chabad, the people who really believed that the Rebbe was Mashiach, changed the rhetoric from before and after because, clearly, he was, I shouldn't say he wasn't the Mashiach as much as he didn't do what people expected the Mashiach to do, which is itself a whole other issue. What exactly is the Mashiach supposed to do? Is he supposed to resurrect the dead? Is he supposed to, what order do you have? What order stuff is supposed to happen is, really up in the air. According to Rambam, he only gets to be the Mashiach after, we've won all the battles and a Sanhedrin is in place that can appoint a Mashiach. So, very different, So,
that's aside. Maybe the same way that maybe Bar Kochel was a Mashiach, maybe the laboratory was, it's just the we were not worthy of.
Right, that's.
I've heard somewhere that your generation has Mashiach. It's just a matter of.
It's another.
Are we worthy of him?
Yeah, another possibility. We gave one of our Sunday classes like a full, hour plus class on just Mashiach and Chazal. That certainly is, but that's a certain type of apologetic answer you give when the guy you have picked, and when I say picked, not just, you're really promoting. And by promoting, there were enough Yechi Adonai Moreinu, Yechi signs, calling last Lubavitcher Rebbe Mashiach. I would also recommend, specifically with Chabad and Messianism, everyone read Dr. Elliot Wilson's book, Open Secret, because he talks about Messianism, not just of the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, but in Chabad thought from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe on down. It's a phenomenal work. Highly recommended. But people were, saying he is Mashiach. And if you say this person is Mashiach and he doesn't live up to it, or doesn't live up to your expectations, then you have to start backtracking.
But if we're to believe that Mashiach can come at any time, then there has to be somebody in the world always that is capable of being the Mashiach. Because isn't that a basic tenet of Judaism that he could come at any time? So he has to be here. It's just a matter of us. So he's always around. So it's not like we're saying it after the fact. It's an excuse.
The term basic tenet of Judaism is a bit loaded. You've got, especially regarding Yemot HaMashiach, quite a few opinions about what that looks like in the Gemara, some of which are mutually exclusive. Also, people are going to have lots of arguments about what Mashiach is going to be, what's he going to be like, what's he supposed to do, and in what order. So, as far as basic tenet, could he be in every generation? Maybe. You could also argue that the time was predetermined, right? It's going to happen, let's say, hypothetically, I'm not saying definitively, let's say it was scheduled to happen, Mayan calendar 2012. Right? Darn it out there. I don't necessarily believe that. It's hypothetical if you're listening. Maybe this time was preset from the time of creation, in which case, you wouldn't necessarily have it in earlier generations. I don't know. But you can see just how dangerous it is. And you could also see the danger of betting on the wrong horse. You know, reading this passage, it wouldn't be too much of a... I mean, if you really want to look at this as cynically as possible, you can say this guy was a sociopath. Like, not just a general, but, like, you know, he also had big issues. And if you put so much faith in a guy who's not entirely stable, that can cause such, you know, significant problems. And it's not uncommon, you know, to find people who might seem larger than life in public have the most disastrous lives, you know, when not in front of the camera. You know, because you're only getting a small snapshot of the people. Now, again, did Rabbi Akiva actually historically do so? Like, you know, get behind Bar Kokhba? We have, you know, one statement that says he did, which is an accounting that, you know, goes back to our original question of how much would we take this Yerushalmi as clear-cut, straight historical fact. I don't know. An interesting question.
Other people other than Rabbi Akiva think that he was the Mashiach?
I haven't found any other.
This is the only instance of anyone saying he might be the Mashiach. And of course, his Bar Kokhba, not even.
To my knowledge, yes.
Okay.
That doesn't mean it's not there.
It's a pretty big endorsement, though. Rabbi Akiva was.
Right. Well, so in which case, there are two ways of reading this. Either Rabbi Akiva actually did so, or even if he didn't, there was a tradition attributed to Rabbi Akiva, which is interesting in its own right. Meaning, if any one of the Tanaim is going to, you know, endorse this guy, why Rabbi Akiva? Which is an interesting question to consider throughout the, you know, previous lectures. We did a little bit about his personality. A wonderful book on Rabbi Akiva is by Louis Finkelstein, Akiva Scholars Something Martyr, which is a wonderful book about, like, his, you know, history. And you'd have to read a lot more about Rabbi Akiva to try to think, how would this fit in? But it is, that is a wonderful question, because whether or not he actually said it or didn't say it, someone thought he did, or someone attributed this to him. And I don't think that the attributions just come out of the blue. There were plenty of Tanaim. It could also be, just throwing it out there, possibly next week we'll get to the death of Rabbi Akiva. And there are a whole lot of stories about that. It could be he's, you know, of the, you know, Asar Haruge Malchut, of, you know, the 10, you know, martyrs. You know, he has one of the most graphic descriptions of his death, and it's repeated a few other places. And there are actually a lot of different dimensions about his death. It could be, again, I'm just going to throw out a suggestion, that the reason why, you know, it's important for Rabbi Akiva to say this is, you know, he had probably one of, you know, the most ignominious ends of, you know, any of the other Tanaim. I mean, his death was, you know, really painful and, you know, clearly traumatic for a lot of the Jewish people. You know, maybe there's some association there. I don't know. It's a theory. But it's, you know, a fairly big question. We also don't, I don't know if or when Rabbi Akiva retracted the statement, you know, and turned around and said, okay, you know, I'm wrong. Yeah. Or, actually, here's another possibility. It just occurred to me now. The actual text here says, Rabbi Akiva kad hu chame bar koziba. It's only when he saw him, he would say he's the Mashiach. Might not meant that he believed that he was Mashiach, but he's afraid of the ghost. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
sorry for taking that. Sorry for stealing your thunder.
It's also, I thought of that because of how you, like, framed the history of it at the beginning of the class, which is, like, they're at war. So he sees the general come up, and I don't know what point in the war, like, if they were now more than double outnumbering the other people in Beitar or whatever, it was like a hopeful statement. Like, he sees the general of the army, and he's like, oh, Mashiach is here. Not that he never says, I think Bar Kokhba is Mashiach. And on the opposite side, Rav Yochanan ben Tzareta doesn't say he's not Mashiach. He says, Mashiach is not going to come in your time, basically. So, like, neither is a definitive statement.
Not only is neither, so we're going to, so I was thinking a slightly different direction, but it's interesting we thought along the same lines. I was going to, you know, think of it as, assuming the guy's mentally unstable, it could be his way of staying on his good side. I mean, you're talking about a guy later kicked Rebbe Lezer of Modi in and killed him. So whenever he walks by, he says, you know, he's the Messiah. You know, could very well be, or Yochanan ben Tzareta might have taken that to say, you know, from Rabbi Akiva's perspective, it could very well be he was flattering the guy because he didn't want to get killed. And we could, you know, see that happening, especially if you've got, you know, someone who's mentally unstable in charge of an army. Why you don't want him, you know, on your bad side. And it could be Rabbi Yochanan ben Tzareta who's saying, you know what? You know, just make sure that you don't really believe what you're saying. Because if it is, it's not this guy. Because he says, you know, even if grass grows on your face, he's not going to come. As you put, I think, really well, it's not going to be during your lifetime, i.e. make sure you know, have in the back of your head, it's very nice you're flattering it, just like make sure that you know that's all it is. And make sure that everyone else knows that all it is. That's all it is. Could be.
I
think your way can work too as well, because they're not, they're not as definitive statements as him actually poskening lahalacha, in terms of he is the Mashiach and therefore X, Y, and Z should happen. It's only in a very specific case that when he'd go by, he'd say something.
I mean, do we basically have a tradition that Bar Kokhba could have been Mashiach and Akiva thought he was? Because this is the only source, I'm not convinced. I don't care. It's not that I'm not convinced that Rabbi Akiva didn't think he was a Mashiach. I'm less concerned with that. We don't see any, maybe, I don't know if there's stuff before here or other stuff about Ben Kaziba, but
now, the stuff before here is more about the destruction of the
there's nothing about his person. There's nothing saying why anyone, Rabbi Akiva or anyone else, would think he's a Mashiach. All there is talk about this particular story and how he's not.
Yeah.
I can understand, if we're going to assume that he is supposed to be a Mashiach, that I can see. I just don't see a reason why. Two things that it made me think of was, Moshe and David, both, if we're assuming that he is supposed to be this Mashiach person, right? So, both, he's involved in war, and he, did things a little wrong.
Yeah.
So, Moshe doesn't go to Israel, and David can't build the Beit HaMikdash, not because he's not a whole, because he was involved in war, by definition, it just means he can't build the Beit HaMikdash. And so, it just could be that, actually, he's not mentally unstable. He just is involved in the wrong situations, and therefore can't fulfill his destiny.
That's definitely a way to spin this. Like I said, there's just so many different ways of interpreting, explaining of what is Yemot Mashiach like. What you're saying would fit very well in the theory that there's a Mashiach in every generation. He could have been it, but messed up. Is there a tradition of it? I mean, yes, in the sense that it's something that I remember hearing at some point before. To really go through how it was perceived over time would require its own story, but you'd have to acknowledge that it's not just, you're not just reading it naturally from the text. You kind of have to read this text in light of what you think Mashiach is. And you can do that in pretty much any way. If you'd start with your concept of here's what what Mashiach is supposed to do. Here's how, or at least the forms of Mashiach, every generation, this was this one. Rabbi Akiva wasn't really believing. There's just so many different ways of reading this that you could bring to it, ranging from that this is what Rabbi Akiva actually believed to no, he only did it in front of him, but privately he might have thought otherwise. Big open question there, which is one of the reasons why it's important to go back to these sources inside, because the first thing that came up when I mentioned we're going to do Rabbi Akiva, first question someone asked was about Bar Kokhba. So he believed in a false Messiah. Did he? Well, maybe. What was the deal like? And all we've got is really one statement with some very definitely odd, or some of the stranger, midrash, or not even strange midrash. The truth is there are a lot of strange midrash, but we definitely have some interesting midrashim that would have to force us to reevaluate the very simple statement to say, Rabbi Akiva believed in Mashiach, and not believed in Mashiach, but believed that Bar Kokhba is Mashiach, and he happened to have got it wrong. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe she's saying, Mashiach in every generation, and he messed up, maybe he's saying the star was coming out of Yaakov or whatever, he's supposed to be Mashiach, and maybe he's too judgmental, he didn't have the whole thing,
it's theologically possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying it's theologically impossible. All I'm saying is you can take different things from this text. I don't want this to come across as saying that I don't think another interpretation here is plausible. There is, my father's very big on instructing. There's a difference between a plausible reading and a necessary reading. A necessary reading is, this is what the text says. You can't go beyond the text. Plausible is, what are some ways of reading it? And you can have multiple plausible readings. I don't think any of them are necessary in the sense that this makes more sense than the others. But, each one could be as good as the other, depending on what side you're reading it from. It could very well be he was, could be he wasn't. I don't know. But hopefully at least now we can at least appreciate a little bit more of just, the simple statement, Rabbi Akiva thought Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Right? Next week we get to his death. Yeah, I guess I should say spoiler alert for that. Yeah, don't worry. He dies. Yeah, what are you going to do? Anyway, I'll probably make the same joke next week, too. All right, have a wonderful week, and try to get home before the snow.
Cool. Bye.